Okay. Okay, before I get started, I want to dedicate the Sikha to some people. I want to dedicate the Sikha to Binyamin Kunstler. And the reason I want to dedicate the Sikha to Binyamin Kunstler is because he was bothering me last night. At about 11 o'clock at night, I get these terribly annoying text messages. How rude to be texting. Can you hear me, by the way, over there in that?
Yes or no?
You can't hear me? I'll go, please, Aaron Gross, anytime. Okay, so he's bothered me last night. 11 o'clock at night. I'm trying to wind down, prepare Shia today, and all of a sudden I'm getting this barrage of text messages. So why would I dedicate the Sikha for someone who's bothering me? The answer is he's not bothering me. He's asking Shilas, wanting to go over points that we had in Shir that he didn't fully chop. And back and forth, I think the last one came in at 11:20. And so to me, that's not a bother. That's the idea that a Talmud, you know, is working on Shir, is doing Chazara, and is willing to bother his Rebbe at 11, 12 o'clock at night. Yashikai. Thank you, Binyamin. Thank you, Binyamin, for bothering me. I want to dedicate this Sikha to Moshe Heller. Everyone understands, you know, Moshe prided himself for a good part of his youth being a beast on the basketball court. And his whole yeshiva league passed Narishkeit. Now I sit in the front over here. I got my little box over here, and he sits in the front, and I steal glances to my right. And every moment that I steal a glance, I see his head is like buried in Mishnais. And I'm going to teach him a halacha that I'm guilty of also, because I have a big Yetzer Hara too. You're not supposed to learn during Chazaras Hashatz. I have a Yetzer Hara too. I like to learn during Chazaras Hashatz, because like, you're just kind of answering amens, but just being pretty passive, so why not learn? So I also have the Yetzer Hara. I like to look at the daf during Chazaras Hashatz, but he's during Chazaras Hashatz, he's got a... After Mincha today, chops a couple of Mishnayos. Before the Sikha, waiting for Maariv, he's chopping a couple of Mishnayos. And that is, that's great. That's unbelievable. So Baruch Hashem. I want to give a shout out as well, a dedication to Akiva Goldschmidt. Now, one second. Akiva Goldschmidt, Shalom Bet guys, you know this. Shalom Aleph guys don't know this, but Akiva Goldschmidt had a lot of challenges last year. One of his challenges is he was scalded, burnt to quasi-death by a huge pot of really, really hot soup. I won't tell you how that happened, but it happened. And he was out of commission for a while. And then this happened, and a bunch of things happened last year. He didn't break his leg, but had a leg thing, and a soup thing, and then this end of August, he had a COVID thing, and just a thing after a thing after a thing. Correct?
Right.
A lot of things. And, you know, he's pining to get back to yeshiva, and now, Baruch Hashem, he's here, and Baruch Hashem, Bli Ayin Hara, no things. Baruch Hashem. And I see in your face, I see a gait in your step. I see a brightness to your face. I see him pulling a certain Talmud, who I don't even see this second at all. I used to be a professor in Yeshiva University. He used to give a lot of C's. Aiki, what are you smiling at? You know exactly. He used to give a lot of C's. So his nickname was the Hook, because he gave C's. So there is a certain fellow, we'll call him the Hook, without mentioning names. But, you know, but maybe Akiva, you should have chavrusas before Maariv, too. That could be I made a mistake in recording this too early. Anyway, okay. And that's that. And then after the Sikha, there'll be a brief, very important, and I want to give a yashikot to Yosef Avram Melov. After the Sikha, he'll explain an initiative that he's introducing and will kick off in Mirtz Hashem tonight. So that's going to happen as well. Okay. All right, this is my weekly address to the yeshiva. And I was torn today in thinking about what I wanted to talk about. I was a little torn. Because on the one hand, there's a part of me that wants to talk about quarantine. As a part of me, because I have what to say and I want to address and kind of deal with how to navigate challenges and things of that sort. I do want to talk about that. On the other hand, the real part of me just wants to talk about yeshiva and talk about regular stuff and talk about what we're really, really looking to accomplish and be here for and kind of give a regular beginning of Chorev Zman type of sikha. So I have both of those like agendas, and I decided I'm going to kind of mash them together and mix them together and kind of hopefully get both points across. But I first want to talk about, talk mostly to the left part of the room, to my left, but talking to everyone, and I want to address a little bit of what's been, how to deal with and how to handle and how to have a proper hashkafa on some of the ups and downs that inheres in this year. And there are ups and downs. We've all experienced them, and we will probably experience some more in some way or another. Hopefully not dramatic, but things happen. And I want to look at it both from a Torah perspective and from a secular perspective and share some insights. And this is something that I, when I speak about this, I want you to know, and I think you know it, but I want you to hear it again because it's true, is that every time, every single up and down that any Talmud in this yeshiva experiences, that I'm aware of, that I'm a part of, that I see and observe, I don't observe everything, but everything that I see and observe, ups and downs that Talmidim, certainly large groups of Talmidim in the yeshiva experience, I promise you, I tell you that I experience it at least vicariously with you. And when guys are in down mode, that puts me in down mode. And when guys are in up mode, that puts me in up mode. My morning shiur heard about that in a very clear fashion yesterday. Because of, I'll just call him Mr. C. But I very much experience your ups and your downs in a very real way with you. In a certain sense, I'm married to you, that in a certain sense. Not literal, of course, but that's part of my experience. So what I'm going to say right now, and the hashkafa that I'm going to try and impart, is something that as much I'm telling you as I'm telling myself. And I think one of the hardest things for me in kind of dealing with some of these ups and downs is a perspective that Hashem has something to do with it. And Hashem is a player in it. And it is not just things that are happening to us, at us, etc. But there is a Ribono Shel Olam. And I think one of the biggest challenges that most people have is navigating what I will call emuna and navigating bitachon. And of the two, and I'm speaking as much to myself as I am to you, emuna for me is the easier one. If you ask me, does Hashem run the world? I'll say yes, and I'll believe it. If you ask me, did Hashem bring COVID to the world? I'll say yes, and I'll believe it. And Hashem is the Borei, and Hashem is Mashgiach, and Hashem governs, and He rules, and who's going to, at the end of the day, the winner of the next United States election is going to be because that's what the Ribono Shel Olam wills. And I believe that. Emuna, for me, is the easier of the two. And we and I will often pay lip service to a belief in Hashem and we'll say things. Baruch Hashem. Things are good. Be'ezrat Hashem. This will happen. Emirtz Hashem. It'll work out. And we pay lip service. And perhaps we even believe it. But the real challenge, I think, is not emuna, but it's bitachon. And what bitachon means at its core is not only do you pay lip service that Hashem runs the world, but you actually believe it and live it. You live with the cognition that Hashem is running the world. And that's a very hard thing to do. To really be a Baal Madrega is to live with Bitachon. So when you have good things that happen to you, it's easier to say, yeah, Baruch Hashem, and thank Hashem. I found a shidduch. An ill person in my life has Refuah Shleima. I become a grandfather, a father. The good things is relatively easy to say, yeah, Baruch Hashem. Hashem's been really great to me. But when things set us back, when things push us down, when things happen to us that we don't want to happen to us, and to still live that this is what Hashem wants, this is God's will, this happened because Hashem willed it, it's the Ratzon Hashem, and there's a purpose and an agenda that Hashem has for me in this challenge, that's something that's really, really hard to live with. It's taking the emuna and making it every day of my life. And when I stub my toe, literally or figuratively, something bad happens, I understand that that's Ratzon Hashem. Hashem willed it, put it into that place, and wanted me to go through this nisayon. I personally, it's an area I struggle with. And as I mentioned, when things are not 100% smooth, don't 100% go perfect, things are not the absolute smoothest scenario possible, bothers me. I get down. It affects my day. It affects my simcha. It affects and a real Baal Bitachon. Yeah, you can be bothered that things are a little off kilter, that are a little off balance, lack of equilibrium. But a real Baal Bitachon says, okay, Hashem did this, and he wants me to take something away from it. He wants me to learn from it, to grow from it, to overcome a challenge, and somehow emerge victorious and better for it. That's a hard test to live that way. I had a neighbor, my wife's best friend, who lost her husband when he was 30 years old. She was 29. They had four children, small children. And she was absolutely devastated, obviously. The pain and challenge that she experienced, nothing like it. Unimaginable. And I cannot tell you how often she was in my home, sharing with my wife, unloading this pain that she experienced. But what was so phenomenally inspiring to us in watching her was at the same time she was so incredibly grateful that she had 7 years with Michael. She was so incredibly grateful that she had these four beautiful children with Michael. And she understood somehow deep down that this was from Hashem. And that's what got her through. And that's what propelled her forward. And it gave her the strength to remarry, to have more children with her second husband, and to rebuild her life, because she understood and believed and lived that this was from Hashem. And Hashem had a purpose, and she will be the first to say it. She wouldn't say it, but I'm saying it because I've heard her say it, that she became a greater person in so many different dimensions because of the tragedy that befell her. And lo aleinu, we should never, ever experience tragedies. But if and when things happen, to have that kind of approach, and I'll tell you, it's hard for me to express this because it's a struggle of mine. But it perhaps can lend some perspective. You know, if Donald Trump can say he understands as a boss and things depend on the boss, and he's not referring to himself, and perhaps he is kowtowing to his constituents, but still nevertheless, an idea of understanding there's a boss, and I have an avoda, and I try with all of my might, to the best of my ability, to translate and to make my emuna real. And by living with my emuna, I turn that emuna into a bitachon, which gives me the ability and the strength to perhaps overcome challenges that come my way. That's a Torah perspective. But I'd like to share with you as well a secular perspective. How many of you have read Man's Search for Meaning? Tzvi Simchon? Have you read it? Anyone else read Man's Search for Meaning? Well, the MTA guys seem to have some education. Very good. A little surprise to surprise, but okay. We'll have to discuss that tomorrow. Anyway. So, Viktor Frankl is the author of Man's Search for Meaning. And Viktor Frankl is a Jew, Austrian, and he grew up on Freudian psychology. And Freudian psychology is essentially built on something called determinism, where basically how you were raised as a child shapes your character, shapes your personality, and essentially governs what you will be as an adult. And there is a certain deterministic type of approach. As I said, he was a Jew. And in World War II, in the Shoah, he was captured by the Nazis, Yimach Shemam. Both of his parents, his brother and his wife, were murdered in the camps and were sent to the gas chambers. His entire family was destroyed by the Nazis except for his sister. And he himself experienced daily torture and innumerable indignities to the point that it wasn't clear which destiny was better, the ovens or having to shovel the ash out of the ovens, which was the job of those who weren't put in the ovens. And one day, naked and alone in a small room, he began to become aware of what he later called the last of the human freedoms. The freedom that his Nazi captors could not take away from him. They could control his environment. They could do what they wanted to his body. but they could not touch his core and basic identity. He could decide within himself how all of this was going to affect him. Between what happened to him, what they did to him, or the stimulus, and his response to the stimulus was his power or freedom to choose. And he developed and moved away from that deterministic Freudian philosophy and psychology and developed a new psychology which he called logotherapy. And basically logotherapy says, in a nutshell, that unlike determinism, and if you study animals, which they did, rats, monkeys, pigeons, dogs, and psychotic people, you will see that they decide based on instinct. And they have instincts, and whatever stimulus you put in front of them, there is an automatic response to the stimulus. And his theory was humans are different. And you have something called stimulus, and you have something called response. But there's something for humans in the middle that is called your freedom to choose how you want to respond. You've heard of the word responsibility? So we're going to change that word a little bit. It's not responsibility, but responsibility. The ability to choose how you want to respond. And there are two types of people in the world. People that I will call reactive and people that I will call proactive. Proactive people choose their response. They don't blame their response on circumstances, on conditions, or on conditioning. Their behavior is a product of their own conscious choice based on their values, not based on their conditions, not based on their feelings. Reactive people are affected by their physical environment. Proactive people choose their response. Now, as I'm saying this, I am feeling uncomfortable. And the reason I'm feeling uncomfortable is because as I stare a little bit to the blue capsule, I do not want them to think, chas v'shalom, that I am judging anyone in how they are responding to their challenge. And I say that to the other capsules as well. We all have challenges. No one is judging how one is responding to challenges. The challenges are real, and everyone's entitled to respond in the way they choose to respond, but that's the key. I am asking you not to be reactive, but to be proactive. You choose how you respond. And this is a work, this is a process, this is a process of avoda. Some people, did it rain here in Mevaseret today? A little bit. It rained in Yerushalayim today. Some people, when it rains, when the weather is lousy, they get down, they get depressed. We're changing the clocks Motzei Shabbos. The nights are going to get longer. There is a psychological phenomenon, I forget what it's called. But when you get to winter, the nights lengthen, the days are shorter. People get depressed. They get down. They are reacting to these external phenomena, to weather, to long nights, what have you. And the opposite is true too. Sometimes a beautiful day, it automatically puts you in a good mood. But that's reactive. Proactive people carry their own weather with them. And even if it's rainy out and it's lousy out, but they can still be in a sunny mood. It's not easy. It's not easy, but be aware that you are today. What you are today is because of the choices that you made yesterday. And think about this a little bit, this line. It's an important line to think about. It's not what happens to us that hurts us. It's our response to what happens to us that hurts us. And therefore, in any time, in any setback you have in life, any setback, think about how you respond. I just want to share with you some language, because language is very telling. There was a philosopher named Wittgenstein. You've heard of Wittgenstein? He was a philosopher of language. He studied language and he developed, like, the way language is used can yield attitudes and philosophies. So listen to reactive language. There's nothing I can do. That's just the way I am. He makes me so mad. They won't allow that. I can't. I must. If only. There's nothing I can do about it. I have to do it. That is reactive language. Let's listen to proactive language. I can choose a different approach. Let's look at our alternatives. I control my feelings. I will choose an appropriate response. I choose, I prefer, I will. A lot of times guys will come to me, say, Rebbe, I don't like learning. Common phenomenon. Common line. And I like to share the following muscle, which I think is a really, really good muscle and hits the point that I'm trying to make. A guy comes in to a counselor and says, my marriage is falling apart. We have three beautiful kids. We've been married for 15 years. And it was great for the first 5 or 7. But it's starting, we're starting to drift. The love is gone. I don't love her anymore. And the counselor says, so love her. And the guy says, I want to, but I don't love her. And the counselor says, so love her. And the guy says, you're not listening to me. I just told you I don't love her. And the counselor obstinately says once again, so love her. What's going on over here? So the counselor explains, the way you, husband, are using the word love is as a noun, as a feeling, as a reactive emotion. And I'm telling you that love as a noun is a Hollywood concept. And love is a verb. So love her. And if you start to love her, buy her flowers, say nice things to her, treat her nicely, she'll start doing the same. And all of a sudden, as a result of the verb, the feelings will be there as well. So, first part of the Sikha. And this has nothing to do with per se. We're talking about it today because of some of our challenges. But at the end of the day, if I really want to improve my situation, the only thing I can really work on is that which I control. And the only thing I control is myself. And I'm not talking about Rahmana Litzlan, death camps, that Viktor Frankl had to chop this. And he said, I had more freedom in those death camps than my Nazi oppressors. Because I had the freedom to put myself in a different place. But this goes to, how do we deal with traffic jams? How we deal with all of life's setbacks? How we keep our commitments and how we deal with any challenges, whether it's current challenges or future challenges, learning challenges, you control your response. And as I say this all without any sense of judgmentality to anyone. I want you to understand that. But to also share with you a mahalach that I'm sharing with myself, a mahalach in life. Because when you get down, and we all get down, but at the end of the day, it's figuring out how to be proactive and how to make those effective moves. I want to share an additional thought that's more general, but equally important as we begin Chorev Zman in Yeshiva. And if you can focus for another 5-10 minutes, and I want to focus on a pasuk in last week's parsha. And the Torah tells us in last week's parsha, Parsha Bereishis, Vayomer Elokim, Hashem says, Tatshei Haaretz, I want the earth to produce grasses. Deshe, Esev Mazria Zera, Eitz Pri Oseh Pri. I want there to be Eitz Pri. What does that mean? Eitz Pri. Fruit trees. Oseh Pri. That make fruit. Fruit trees. Oseh Pri. That make fruit. That's what Hashem wants. Fruit trees that make fruit. And what happens? And what happened? It's not fruit trees that are making fruit, but rather trees that are making fruit. And Rashi, famous Rashi, you all know it, because you're pounding Steinmicker. Rashi explains that there was a plan, and the plan was that the quote-unquote fruit tree, the bark and the trunk and the roots and the branches would taste like fruit. It would be a fruit tree that would also produce fruit. And because of the chet of Adam and rebellion, what happened was, so to speak, the land changed things up. And said, no. We're going to produce trees that taste like wood that are going to produce fruit. That's the medrash that Rashi says. What is the idea that the medrash is telling us? It's an idea. What's the concept? Adam and Chava were put in Gan Eden, an ideal and idyllic world where everything was supposed to be perfect. And in a perfect world, even the bark, even the trunk might taste like fruit. That's not the world that we are destined to be. And I would suggest and posit, this idea comes from Rav Kook, that what the Medrash is telling us is there is process and there is result. Fruit is the result of the tree. It's the end game. It's what everyone wants. That luscious orange and pomegranate apple. That's the end game. And in Gan Eden, in the ideal world, that's all there was end game. Just enjoy the fruit. But that's not the way it's supposed to be. There is process. And what the roots and what the tree and what the branches and the leaves represent is the process necessary to produce fruit. And I don't know if you have fruit trees in your backyard, but I have a schus of having a fantastic orange tree in my backyard. It's fantastic. I marvel at the orange tree. I have a pomegranate tree too, and a lemon tree, but it's the orange tree that is my absolute favorite. In the winter, towards the end of the winter, these little flowers, check that, summer, these little flowers start to appear. White flowers. Out of this wood branch, white flowers start to appear. They smell fantastic. And then the flowers fall. And behind the flowers is this tiny little speck of green. And then it starts to grow. An inch, 2 inch, 4 inch. Right now my oranges are yay big. Greenish yellow, estrel color. In about 3-4 weeks, they'll be yay big, a fantastic orange color. I will bring some in for you. Best oranges ever. And they're the pride and joy. Pride and joy. It's an incredible thing. It's a piece of wood in dirt that produces this big, fat, juicy chunk of sweetness. It's an incredible, incredible thing. And Hashem wanted, perhaps as the ideal, that the tree would also taste like that. And then no, change plants. No. And the reason is because process is as important as result, and maybe even more important. And the message of that medrash is, it would not be okay just to give the fruit. The process of generating the fruit is critically, critically important. And that process is the shvitz, is the work, is the day in and day out. And you might not always feel the geschmack every single day. You might not. Farmers don't. Not every single day. Some days you'll be more into it, some days you'll be less into it. Some days you'll be more into your davening, some days less. Some days more into the sugya, some days less. But I can tell you, with 100% certainty and confidence, that the process is absolutely critical. And if on one day you chop it really, really fast, you got lucky, and that's nice, but you missed on something. You missed out on something. Because the bark, and the work, and the schwitz, and the day in, day out, is what's ultimately going to make you great. And therefore, I want to tell you that there are going to be some guys in this yeshiva who look at the schedule, shachar's at 7:50, 9:30 to 12:30, morning seder, 3 to 6, afternoon seder, 8 to 10, night seder, and do everything extremely well. And check every single box. And that's great. That's great. But believe me when I tell you, you do that, you'll be a success. But you'll have hit a single. That is not the goal. The goal is to stretch yourself. Curriculums in any school and any yeshiva are made for the average person. There is not one great person that became great because of his school curriculum. Einstein did not become Einstein because of the schools he went to. And Rav Chaim Kanievsky does not become Rav Chaim Kanievsky because of the yeshiva that he went to. Everyone who achieves greatness breaks out of the confines of their, so to speak, curriculum. And they identify for them what's going to work for them, how they can achieve more. It's not always quantitatively, sometimes it's qualitatively. Through davening, through focusing more, doesn't have to be staying up till 1 o'clock in the base medrash, it could be staying till 10:30, but making sure that 60 minutes of every hour is 60 minutes, and not 40, and not 28. It might have to do with where our phones are during siddurim or during shiur. It might have to do with how we're chazaring. It might have to do with how we're using our Tuesday afternoons. It's not a coincidence in this yeshiva that seder ends at 6, but dinner is at 6:30. That is not an accident. The idea is to bleed from 6 into 6:30. And to go ahead and maximize. As up and down and as challenging as this year may or may not be, at the end of the day, it's your year. And it's your year to make great. And I will tell you that as I look around this room, I happen to think the Shana Aleph and Shana Bet guys in this yeshiva are fantastic. It's an amazing chevra of motivated guys, of growth-oriented guys, Shana Bet guys who want to learn Shana Aleph guys, Shana Aleph guys who want to learn Shana Bet guys, and who want to push themselves and who want to be pushed. And our mission and our goal, collective goal, is to do everything we can for you. But as important is be ambitious. Avodas Hashem demands ambition. Stretch yourself. Be your best. Don't be satisfied with mediocrity. And make you choose your response. Whatever stimulus presents itself, know that you choose how you want to respond to that stimulus. And even if you don't always feel and see the sweetness of those payros, understand that the process and the schwitz is the goal. The journey is the goal. It's not just the payros that's the goal. It's the journey that's the goal. It's the journey that's the goal. And by accomplishing the svitz, you'll open up tremendous, tremendous vistas for yourself. I'd like to call upon Rabbeinu Yosef Avram.